But I'll get there, Amos Yerkes told himself. I have the most difficult assignment, but I'll carry it out. They gave me the farthest target, the hardest one to reach, because they know I'm the best of the batch. The others needed drugs to buck up their courage, but I've never touched them. I'm better than they are, and they know it. That's why they've entrusted me with the most demanding task, blowing up their environmental control center. Yerkes was 22 and considered himself a failure as a son and as a man. But this is one thing I will not fail at. Nothing in my life, he slightly misquoted Shakespeare, will so become me as my leaving of it. In the light of his helmet lamp he saw another of those dreadful partitions. It had taken him far longer to open the last few than he had thought it would. Hours, it seemed. They were all stuck fast, and he had been sweating inside a spacesuit before he could pull them down on their creaking hinges. Then, once he had crawled over them, they had each snapped shut again with a startling clang that could probably be heard over the length and breadth of the base. This partition was no different. A thin baffle of metal hinged on the bottom, stuck fast with caked dust. Yerkes brushed doggedly at the dust with his gloved fingers, wishing he could open his visor and blow the stuff out of his way. But he had been ordered to keep his spacesuit sealed, just in case the vent tunnels did not hold air as they believed. As he worked, sweat stinging his eyes, he pictured the services that would be held in his honor back in Atlanta. General O'Connor himself will give the eulogy, he thought. My parents will cry and wish they had treated me better. Vince Falcone was grateful for the moon's low gravity as he and six other men trundled heavy cylinders of oxygen down the corridor toward the Environmental Control Center. Doug's idea was wild, Falcone thought, but he couldn't think of anything better. This had better work, he told himself. Otherwise, we'll all be dead in another half hour or so. You will take me to the control center, the spacesuited Japanese said. I can't, Edith blurted. He grabbed her wrist hard. Why not? Thinking as swiftly as she ever had, Edith lied. The corridors are guarded. We'd both be shot the minute we stepped outside. He glared at her. And we're so far away from the control center, Edith quickly added, that your bomb wouldn't touch it if you set it off in here. Still glaring, he looked around at the studio's cameras and fake bookcase sets. Not a worthy target. You're hurting my wrist, Edith said. He let go. You are my hostage, he said. Okay, she said, looking around the empty, sparsely lit studio. Nowhere to hide, nothing here but video and VR equipment. Even if I grabbed a camera or tripod or something and tried to bash him, he's protected by his helmet, and he might set off his bomb. You will call the control center and tell them to surrender to me, the young man said, his voice harsh, guttural. If you refuse, I will kill us both. Oh, I'll call them. Don't worry about that. Doug fidgeted on his chair, waiting for Falcone to report he was ready to pump high-pressure oxygen into the plasma vents. We're clear of the factory, Jenny Anson reported from a corridor wall phone. Had to seal the whole section of corridor because the door to the factory's been damaged by the blast. Okay, fine, Doug said. We ought to open the vents to vacuum in a few minutes. Silently, he added, Come on, Vince. Call from the university studio, a Comtex voice said in his earphone. Edith, he knew. Doug nodded and touched the proper keypad. Edith's face appeared on his central screen. She looked strained, worried. Then Doug saw, behind her, the face of an Oriental in a spacesuit helmet. Doug, I'm a hostage. The intruder pushed her aside. You must surrender to me immediately. If you don't, I will blow up this chamber with this woman in it. Doug felt as if someone had pushed him off a cliff. His mouth went dry. It took him two swallows to work up enough moisture to reply, Hold on. I'll surrender. Just don't do anything foolish. I must speak to the commander of Moonbase, the suicide bomber insisted. No underlings. I'm Doug Stavanger, the chief administrator of Moonbase. The Japanese eyes widened momentarily. Douglas Stavanger? The one whose body is filled with nanomachines? Yes, that's me. Doug felt Bam Gordette's presence behind him, strong, protective. You must come here and surrender to me personally. I understand. Now, quickly. Otherwise I kill her. Okay, I'm on my way, Doug said. He cut the connection and jumped up from his chair. Gordette stood in his way. You go in there, he's going to set off his explosives. If I don't go, he's going to kill Edith. Environmental Control Center. Falcone and his team threaded their way through the maze of piping and pumps that recycled and circulated air through Moonbase, dragging the cylinders of high-pressure oxygen, clunking loudly along the narrow metal mesh walkways that twined through the throbbing equipment. There it is, one of his men shouted, pointing to a metal hatch set into the rock ceiling. Falcone squinted up to where the man was pointing. The ceiling was shadowy, crisscrossed with pipes. Nah, he said. Further back. We want the last one of the hatches, the very last one. The man grumbled but moved on, deeper into the EVC. Is this really gonna work? Asked the guy just behind Falcone, gasping with exertion as he dragged the bulky oxygen cylinder. High-pressure gas on this end, vacuum on the other end. Oughta blow out anything in the vents that ain't fastened down. Oughta, the man puffed. Oughta, Falcone said to himself. If the team with the friggin' hoses shows up in time. Doug spoke into his handheld phone as he ran along the corridor toward the university studio. How soon? He demanded. Got the hoses, finally, Falcone's voice crackled. Give me 5 minutes. We've got to open the vents to vacuum, Vince. Water's shorting out half the sections on level 2. 3 minutes. Call the control center when you're ready. Ginny's back and she'll handle it. What about you? Glancing at Gordette, loping along beside him with his assault rifle gripped tightly in his hands, Doug replied, I've got other problems. As far as Amos Yerkes could tell, this was the last partition between him and the Environmental Control Center. Blinking at the sweat trickling into his eyes, telling himself he should have thought to wear a headband, he pulled out the schematic map of Moonbase and tried to check out where he actually was. Yes, that should be the end of the tunnel on the other side of this partition. One more to go and he'd be directly over Moonbase's Environmental Control Center. When I blow that up, he thought happily, they won't have any air to breathe. I won't go alone. I'll take all of them with me. He started working on the partition with newfound energy. Face streaked with grease, Ginny Anson sat at the same console Doug had been using, finger hovering over the keypad that would open all the plasma vent baffles. Come on, Vince, she grumbled to herself. Move it, you big ape. As if he'd heard her, Falcone's swarthy face appeared on the screen showing the Environmental Control Center. Grinning broadly, he said, All connected. We're ready any time you are. Anson let out a grateful sigh, then said, 10 seconds? 10 seconds, Falcone said, teeth flashing. On my mark. She glanced at the console's digital clock. Mark. 10 seconds and counting, Falcone said. As they approached the double doors of the studio, Doug said to Gordette, Are you a good enough shot to get him without hitting the explosives? Gordette grunted. Which eye do you want me to hit? Doug almost stopped running. We're going to kill a man, he realized. Deliberately kill him. Or try to. Besides, Gordette added, they're most likely carrying plastic explosives. Bullets won't set them off. You're sure? Yep, said Gordette, without missing a stride. As he worked on the final partition, Yerkes wondered how the other volunteers had done. He had felt the rumble of 2 explosions, it seemed like hours ago. Since then, nothing. The others must be having the same troubles I've had, he thought, but they don't have as far to travel as I do. I'll blow up my target before they even get to theirs. The thought pleased him. The partition was loosening. He could feel it as he dug the accumulated dust away from its hinges. Not merely loosening. It was shaking, flapping. It sprang open, banging on his helmet, half-stunning Yerkes. He heard a rushing sound, like wind. Like a roaring hurricane. He was sliding along the